Back in the old days, when Zen students gathered in person in Zendos or went together on retreats to monasteries or retreat centers, in addition to Zazen and Dokusan and Dharma talks, practice often included a work period. And many places, the work was considered an equally important expression of practice. Now, in many places, that work would consist primarily of cleaning. And I've been on retreats where the work practice was to meticulously scrub down a small surface area, wipe down walls or wash floors. Sometimes it was doing dishes in the kitchen. Out in San Diego, for one reason or another, they always seem to give me latrine duty, cleaning out porta potties. But basically, the rationale behind that was twofold. One, it was a practice of getting off your cushion, out of your mind, and into giving close attention to the things of your everyday life, treating them with care and respect, maintaining them. And it brought practice into your everyday life. It wasn't a purely mental or internal experience on the cushion, but it was, how do you handle yourself? What care do you give to things and to other people? Now, I remember many years ago describing this work practice to a woman friend of mine, and her response was, look, I'm the mother of two small children. If I'm going to take a week off for a retreat, I don't need to spend it cleaning floors. And I think that it's certainly the case that all too many people, especially women, have all the experience they need in spending their day cleaning. I think you can see it has an entirely different meaning and value if you think of the students or the monks as a bunch of the Japanese equivalent of young yeshiva bookers, young men who spend all their time in university or studying and are very unworldly, and suddenly they're being asked to wash the floor or do the dishes. They've never done a chore in their life, right? And so, in part, there's a value in getting people in work practice to expand their notion of who they are, what their job is, what their role is. Certainly, there was a way in which traditional work practice got young men to do all sorts of things that was traditionally women's work, and that was a very good thing. And it's possible that a few of them even remembered how to do that sort of thing when they got home. And it is one of the basic ways in which Zen practice often filtered into people's everyday life. I remember a discussion after one of these talks in San Diego where people were asking, how did Zen change your life? And one woman simply said, my room is much neater, right? We have all sorts of ideas about personal and spiritual transformation, but the clearest expression of that just might be a made bed in a clean room and no dishes in the sink. In our Zendo over the years, we've done some amount of cleaning as work practice, but I think that what characterized it predominantly for us for many years was having people go out into the community and pick up litter from the streets outside. I think it was a good way in which we can give something back to the community. And it's, again, not a bad experience to go out and do something that is a little bit awkward, a little bit out of our comfort zone, to go down the street and be picking up cigarette butts and old cans and pieces of paper, and seeing what it feels like to have people look at you as you do that. Some will be grateful, some will be very quizzical. And I remember when we first started doing this many years ago, One of the students, you know, came to me and sort of had the reaction of, why am I out there picking up other people's cigarette butts? I didn't smoke. I don't throw my litter on the street. This isn't my garbage. Right? And basically, the lesson to be learned is, yes, it's all your garbage. It's all your responsibility. See, particularly in the contemporary West, we have a very narrow conception of responsibility. We tend to think of responsibility as individual. We are held responsible for what we've done, but usually also only for things we've done intentionally. You know, we have things like a insanity defense. You know, you don't think it's right to hold people responsible for something if they didn't know what they were doing, if it was an accident, if there were all sorts of extenuating circumstances that impaired their judgment or made them incapable of really understanding what was going on. We think of these things as extenuating or mitigating circumstances. There's the notion in Kant that moral responsibility is something that we have to impose on ourselves. There's no divine law or natural order that says what we must do, but we bind ourselves through reason to obligations, to things that we think are necessary to be just or good people. But the binding force of that is something that we impose on ourselves. Now, I think that seeing that kind of responsibility as individualistic has a number of different problems. And I think that I've spoken in the past about how Hegel in particular said obligation is basically social, that who we are was basically social beings who are defined by our roles and our mutual responsibility. Our obligation isn't just something we put on ourselves, but exists because of our role in a family and in society and through our jobs and through everything else. And there's something in the Buddhist idea of responsiveness that dovetails with this expanded notion of responsibility that isn't about obligation. You see, when a crying child runs into the room, a mother immediately runs over and picks the child up and soothes her. This is not an act of obligation. It's not an act of her trying to decide what's the right thing to do. It's an immediate response. It's an expression of her being a mother that she immediately holds and soothes a crying child. It's what mothers are, what mothers do. Right? We can think of all sorts of examples of our functioning that comes out not of this narrow sense of sort of lawful responsibility of what we're supposed to do, what there's a should involved, but simply acting according to who we are in the circumstances. And some of this is relates to a role or a profession. You know, if you're a doctor in an emergency room and they bring in a bleeding person, you immediately know what to do as a doctor and you set about doing it. If you're a dishwasher in a restaurant and they bring in a load of dirty dishes, you immediately set to washing them. You're the dishwasher, these are the dishes. Right? It's who you are and what your job is. We can say these are all expressivist notions of responsibility, just acting out of who we are under the appropriate circumstances. Now, the danger in that kind of definition of responsibility is that it gets essentialized, that a person basically gets typecast or stereotyped. Things get to be called women's work, right? Childcare is what the women do, or the housework is what women do. Intellectual work is what the men do, right? And a big part of what we strive to do in our all our practices is break down those kinds of centralizing categories. In Zen, that's what we mean by emptiness, right? That no one is in an essential category once and for all. There's no particular role that defines who they are for all time, whether that role is male or female, or a social role defined by class or caste or race or gender. To say all these categories is empty is to say that they're fluid, immutable, and we can move in and out of them, right? And that our responsibility is not defined by any single one of them, but may spread all over the spectrum according to what presents itself to us in the moment, what needs to be done, and how we're capable of responding. See, the counterpoint or the other side of the coin of emptiness is interconnection or interdependency. It says that we're no one thing, but we're defined by a whole web of causal and social relations and responsibilities. Who we are is not one essential inner thing, but who we are is that set of roles and responsibilities. You know, in the meal chant, we say 72 labors brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. The food arrives or is there only because all these farmers, all these workers in the fields, all the shopkeepers, all the people who drive the truck, everything comes together to grow the food, preserve it, transport it, sell it, deliver it to us, right? We see the opportunity to have that food as the result of all these different roles and interactions. Well, basically, we're just like that, right? Who we are is the result of all these multiple social interactions that define who we are and what we do and what our responsibilities are. In contrast to this very narrow individual notion of I'm responsible for what I did and what I intend, in classical times, for instance, the Greeks had a very different notion of responsibility, and they said, you're not just responsible for what you intended, you're responsible for all the unintended consequences of your actions. That's part of the fate and sometimes tragedy of being human. See, they had a very strong sense of interconnectedness and unintended consequences, right? They might say that what we get from the notion of complexity theory, the idea, you know, that the butterfly wings in the Andes can bring a hurricane in the Northern Hemisphere, they might attribute all those mysterious forces to the gods. But the upshot was all sorts of mysterious forces bring us to where we are today, and our actions may have whole ripple effects throughout our lives and throughout the world that we can't imagined that we never intended. Yet, because we pushed over that first domino, it's our responsibility to deal with everything that comes tumbling down thereafter. You know, the paradigmatic example in classical Greece was Oedipus, right? He did not intend to kill his father. He did not intend to marry his mother. In fact, he had been warned about those very things and did everything he could to, under his power to try to avoid doing them, and yet he ended up doing them anyway. But for the Greeks, there was no way for him to plead, I didn't mean it. That doesn't matter. He did it. He had to take the consequences of it. And in our world today, probably climate change and ecological disaster is the kind of metaphorical equivalent of our Oedipal dilemma, right? The unintended consequences of things we thought we were avoiding. You know, I was just trying to drive to work. I was just trying to take my car up to the Cape for vacation. I didn't intend the ice caps to melt. I didn't realize that was going to contribute to global warming. I was just drinking a bottle of seltzer water. I didn't realize that that bottle and 10 million other bottles was going to end up in the ocean, destroy the ecology of sea life. See, when we do our work practice, when we walk down 74th Street, picking up all those cigarette butts that we didn't throw there ourselves, what we're doing is accepting our role and our responsibility in a whole web of cause and effect just by our participation in modern life, and particularly in a capitalist consumerist society. We don't intend all those bad things, but all those things are part of the 72 labors that bring us the life we live. Most of the time we take it for granted and we don't pay attention to the consequences of it. But our practice says that our life is inextricably tied to all those things, and we're responsible for all of it. It too often, practice like this gets preoccupied with things like the search for our true self. And we think our true self is something hidden deep inside us, that it's underneath our thought, our feeling, our preoccupation. We think it must be something like pure awareness or our oneness with the universe, something that we'll discover through concentration or introspection, and it'll be ours, it'll be special, it'll be something about us that we find in our depths when we look deep inside. But it may turn out that that whole kind of paradigm, that whole metaphor has us looking in exactly the wrong direction. What we're up to here may not be so much a matter of looking for our true self as looking for the truth about ourself. And the truth about ourself is that it is interconnected, infinitely responsible, that the self is this nexus of obligation and relation and responsibility. It's not inside us at all. It's out there. It's who we are responsible for, right? Not who we are deep inside. If you want to know your true self, look around you.